Today is October 11th, 2017, and this is episode number 432 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I have a snow globe. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note. Kaboom, kaboom, kaboom at ACM at macobserver.com.
Boom goes the dynamite.
Yes, yes, it does. I have a snow globe. It is this fantastic snow globe from Cool. Is that right? Cool Snow Globes. Am I giving this correct? Yep. Cool Snow Globes. That is, it uses a crap ton of glitter instead of snow. Mm-hmm. And this stays suspended for quite a long time. And it has the moon in the middle.
So you can have a cloudy moon.
It's more like starlight. Right. Starlight okay. surrounding the celestial body. And it is quite mesmerizing. Coolsnowglobes.com. And no, I don't get any kind of affiliate revenue for that. I wonder if they do an affiliate program because I'd become an ambassador. I love that they have some great snow globes. They've got one with the planet Earth, the same thing, but it's the planet Earth. And they've got another one that's tinted blue that has nothing but glitter in it. It's called Moonlight. But then they've got, I don't know, a couple score of other ones, like, you know, there's one that's fall where the snow is designed to look like leaves. And
that's really cool.
They've got one with like a Zen rock pile, and they've got another one with
so it's like you get crystals pelted by boulders if you shake it.
No, I think that one is actually snow. Most of them are snow, not glitter. And they I guess they have their own mix that they call flitter, which is a combination of snow and glitter. But these things are nice. They have a nice solid base. They're nice quality glass. I mean, there's like certainly no air in this one. I hate cheap snow globes, but I'm very much captivated by quality ones. And this one has been, I probably pick it up and turn it over like 10, 15 times a day.
This is really cool. I'm looking at the site now.
Yeah, they've got a lot of lovely designs. You know, and on my trip that I took, we saw another one called Fog. I think it was like San Francisco Fog or Fog City or something like that. Mm-hmm. That was the same concept. It's glitter, except for it's probably like a density of somewhere between 5 and 10 times the one that I have, which has a very high density of snow. It's like a lot more snow. I mean, I don't know. The one I've got is probably 10 times more glitter than or 20 times more glitter than most snow globes have. Mm-hmm. the drop, you know, the globs of snow. This Fog City one that we saw was another like five or six times as dense as this, and it really looks like fog. Like the entire contents of the snow globe are completely obscured, and as it slowly settles, you've got the Golden Gate Bridge towers slowly being revealed, and it which is exactly how the Golden Gate Bridge looks like in a heavy fog. It's quite lovely.
Really cool.
I thought about like starting my collection of snow globes by adding that one to the one I bought. Mm-hmm. But I thought the insides were kind of cheesy and the base was cheesy, and you know, it's, I don't do cheesy.
No, you're not a cheesy kind of guy.
unless it's jokes.
You're a very cheesy kind of guy.
Exactly. All right. Anyway, inside the mind of Brian. Sorry about that.
I love it when you get something new that you're really interested in, because you like go all in, and then I get all of this really great information that I don't have to go and research myself, because you do it and then you're excited and you just want to share it with me.
I'm super obsessive and end up keeping interest for a very short, intense amount of time. And then I often, but not always, but I often move on.
All right. Well, then are you still into sealing wax?
I am, very much so, but I haven't had time to. I've been going nonstop for the last 3 months, and I haven't written a letter. I've got letters I need to write, and I haven't written a letter. I haven't done any sealing. I haven't posted any new sealing wax videos on Instagram, where, by the way, I am Geek Tells.
Yes, I've seen your sealing wax stuff on Geek Tales on Instagram, and I like it. It's fun.
I've been posting some other stuff on Instagram, but not sealing wax stuff. But yeah, that is something that I expect to have a very, very long infatuation with.
That's cool. Speaking of Instagram, I'm mm-hmm. I'm Jay Gamut.
Yeah, I've seen your stuff.
And I've seen it occasionally too. So I posted a photo last Wednesday that I really liked. I was at the farmer's market and they had turned on the hanging lights that stretch across the area where the food court is.
Yeah.
And I really liked the photo, but it was kind of a melancholy, bittersweet thing for me because that was the last Wednesday night farmer's market in Boulder for the season.
Because you're heading into winter.
Because we're heading into winter. There's still Saturdays. So if you go to one of the Saturday farmer's markets, I'll be there. You know, I'll show up.
Gotcha.
So people can say hi to me there.
Well, wait. So where if they can still do a farmer's market, why don't they do the other one?
It's because as we get farther into the fall and then winter season, fewer people are showing up. And doing something earlier in the day, which is the Saturday farmer's market, it's warmer typically than doing something in the evening.
Of course.
Which is the Wednesday farmer's market.
Yeah, of course. That makes sense.
Yeah. So anyhow, I like the photo, but it was kind of sad at the same time.
Yeah.
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 That's some really good honey.
That's good.
Local honey.
Local honey is a good thing. That's what they say. That's what they say. What show is this?
This is Jeff and Brian hang out in life.
Let me tell you about my cowboy hat.
Yeah, you can tell me about your cowboy hat. I found this cane that I thought would be really cool for you.
That would probably go with my new cowboy hat. Cane to have any color? Is it gold handle? Maybe some rhinestones or artificial gems of some sort.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, they're artificial gems, but that's because only the finest for a cane like this.
Yeah, the cowboy hat I have on order strides that line between I don't know. I'll be a little more politically correct. I'll just point out that Stevie Ray Vaughan might have worn it back in the day.
And he could have totally rocked the hat.
Yeah, he totally would have rocked that.
And it's a nice hat.
Yeah. All right. So anyway. speaking of fake news.
That was actually a good segue.
Thank you.
For you.
There was an interesting development for me. For me, let's do some expectation management
here. Right. Okay, so we've set the bar.
Something interesting happened yesterday, and that was Tuesday. When I say yesterday,
okay,
Tuesday, October 10th.
Yes, something interesting.
Where the Dow Jones, a very reputable newswire that caters to the financial world, mm-hmm. right? Very reputable, mm-hmm. despite being owned by News Corp. And they put out a series of fake stories.
Like they fabricated stories and put them out?
Well, that's the okay. So let me tell you what actually happened, and from then on, there's really a lot of speculation. So they had a story that Apple and some more prefacing here.
Okay,
and I didn't mention this in my article. There were other fake stories yesterday, but it's the Apple one that caught all the attention.
Okay,
and they put out a story that said Apple. Google had purchased Apple for $9 billion.
$9 billion.
Yeah. Apple, of course, being worth $800 billion, give or take a bit. Right. $804 billion when I was putting the story together.
But still, so Google buys Apple.
Yeah. And that this was a deal arranged by Steve Jobs on his deathbed after secret negotiations with Larry Page, and that the deals, the terms of the deal had been revealed in Steve Jobs' will, which apparently was just read for the first time a couple, you know, like 2 days ago or something.
Brian, come on. I mean, you know how red tape works. It just takes a while to get around to something like reading someone's will, you know, like 6 years.
Right, exactly. And of course, in reality, his will had been executed a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And when he died, he was in the midst of a nuclear war with Google and Larry Page. And Google isn't called Google anymore. It's called Alphabet. And the deal is supposed to close tomorrow. That would be today, Wednesday, the 11th. Mm-hmm. And of course, a deal like that would actually take months and months and months, if not a year, to clear regulatory hurdles because of the size. And
it would be something that everyone would know about well in advance.
Yeah. And it would also be probably not clear regulatory hurdles from the standpoint of then it would put one company in charge of all of the smartphones.
Oh yeah, that's true too.
Right. So anyway, so it's clearly a nonsense story. It's a nonsense story. And,
well, then
and
why then did they run this?
And they did what they did more though. There were several accompanying stories, including one that was titled "Google Employees Say Yay." That was one. That was a news article on the Dow Jones Newswire. Google employees say yay. And the reason why Google employees were saying yay was because they were going to be moving into Apple's quote unquote fancy headquarters. Now, a lot of other people that covered this took that to mean one infinite loop. But I actually assume that it's a vague reference to Apple Park, which is sure. Actually, there's not a whole lot that's really special about infinite loop anymore. It was built in the 80s, after all. Right, when was Infinite Loop built?
Yeah, I think that was built in the 80s.
I think it was built in the 80s, but...
But you're going to find out anyhow, because top men.
Yes, we're gonna find this out.
And also, you are mostly pedantic.
Construction of the Infinite Loop campus was completed in 93.
Oh.
Started... Yeah, I believe it was. No wonder Steve hated it.
Because it wasn't his thing.
Anyway, so I assume that that's actually a reference to Apple Park. They don't specify Apple Park, and it really doesn't matter because it's all fake. And then, so, you know, one might think there are a couple of aspects. There are a multitude of aspects of this. One is that it sent Apple's stock up $2 a share very briefly. And the theory is...
It went up because people thought Google had really bought them for $9 billion?
Well, so the theory is that it was trading bots who were unable to tell the difference between... Unable to tell that these were fake stories.
Okay.
And when one company is supposed to buy another company... The shares of the company being bought usually go up because usually a purchase is going to be above whatever Wall Street has priced the company at. Usually, mm-hmm. So the idea is that you know you hear the bots are scanning news stories and one company's going to buy another company, and so. It's just a safe bet to anticipate that stock is going to go up a little bit. So, you know, you're willing to pay a slight premium. And so, boom, all of a sudden the stock goes up $2. And you're saying to yourself, $2, who cares? $2. And it went back down. So who cares?
That's a lot of money.
That's a $10 billion market capitalization error. And, you know, a billion here and a billion there. And pretty soon you're talking some real money.
And, yeah, but not real news.
But not real news. So there's an issue. So there, and these stories were only up for a few minutes. Dow Jones did pull them down. And then they issued a statement. And one would think that this was the result of some kind of hack. Mm-hmm. That someone, a prankster, or someone looking to upset the markets, or, you know, where my mind went would be, someone like the Russians using something hyperbolic to see if they can't mess with the markets, to test manipulation.
Okay.
But Dow Jones said that it was a the result of a technical error.
So they wrote these what I will now call joke stories, and then accidentally ran them.
Well, yes. I mean, that's a good question. Who wrote these stories? Why would they bother writing joke stories and having them entered into a system where they could be posted?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
It doesn't quite add up. They haven't fessed anything more. So you've got real money. Briefly, at the very least, was being manipulated by these artificial stories from a trusted news source. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, absolutely the definition. Well, it's at least one definition of fake news, because fake news there's three definitions of fake news. One would be something like this. It was just a joke. Mm-hmm. And then one would be stories that are put out there to manipulate public opinion or manipulate public opinion about politics, about political figures, about a campaign, things like that. Mm-hmm. Or then you have, of course, President Trump's definition of fake news, which is anything that he disagrees with, which is, of course, a complete and total nonsense definition. But mm-hmm. whatever. Those are the three ways that fake news is currently being used right now. So
is it possible that there's a disgruntled employee that decided, all right, well, I'm going out with a bang, so I'm going to drop these stories into the system and go take my permanent lunch break?
Yeah, that's possible, except for I would imagine that if someone did this deliberately, that they would be subject to criminal prosecution. I don't know that, and I'm not an attorney.
But it seems plausible. Of course, people do a lot of really stupid things when they're pissed off and want to make a statement when they leave a job.
Yeah, or, you know, even if they're wanting to, like, if they think that they can hide their, you know, and pin it on someone else, for instance. So, I mean, so we don't know. We don't know what kind of technical error this was. We don't know where it came from. If this was nothing but some kind of technical error, it very much beggars the question of who bothered to write this and why.
Yeah.
And what, you know, why was it entered into any kind of system, and what could they possibly be testing, or I don't know. It's interesting.
And really weird. I think that there's a lot more going on here than they're fessing up to.
I personally believe that to be the case. I do. I think that there's more here than what's going on. And I think that they're if the SEC is doing its job, there should be some repercussions for this.
Yeah, I agree.
Because this affected real people's real money, and not just the Wall Street people. Anyone caught up in that, anyone who ended up paying, you know, any little trader who ended up paying, you know, $2 extra a share. I mean, that's real money.
Yeah, it is. And then when it dropped back down, that's real money for some people that's potentially just lost.
Right. And then, of course, there are people who there are possible short sellers who could have profited from it. Mm-hmm. So it's, and I guess that's one possibility. Someone who is deliberately trying to, of course, it seems like they would do a better, they would have a more plausible story. For instance, Google bought Apple for $900 billion.
Yeah, that would be more plausible. Because now you're talking numbers that fit with Apple's value.
Ish. So that would represent a premium over Apple's.
Yeah, but the market point capitalization is $900 billion is much more believable than $9 billion.
Right. Yeah. So if you're gonna manipulate the markets for some quick profit, because you know what's going to happen and you're able to play the market accordingly. It seems like you want to do a better job. So I don't know. It is super weird. It's super mysterious, in my opinion. I suspect that we're going to end up hearing more about this. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I'm looking forward to when they make a movie about this.
Yeah, if there was any kind of conspiracy involved, this could end up being a movie.
Yeah, I'm assuming Tom Hanks will play the investigator.
Probably.
Yeah.
George Clooney could be the manipulator.
Yeah. Yeah, and then
I'd watch the crap out of this.
I'd watch this. Ben Affleck would probably end up being the traitor that gets roped into all this too.
Right.
And this shows one of the real problems with Hollywood, because the whole movie is going to end up being cast with men when there's incredibly talented women that could play all these roles. Of course, now I'm assuming that it doesn't matter who the people are that are actually cast.
Yeah.
You want people that are playing the roles, which means it would probably end up being men, because that's the dominant part of this market. But anyhow, love your hat.
Hello, man, it's dark down here, dude. This rabbit hole that you dropped us into.
I like that hat.
Right. So you have hammering. What's going on over there?
Oh, Brian, this is so frustrating for me. So there's construction going on across the alley from the building that I'm in. And it was supposed to have been done before the end of September.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are, and it is October 11th. And they are still at it with no end in sight.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
It's great.
Yeah. It's a giant bucket of awesome without a cool hat.
Well, technically, I've got a cool hat, or it's being made. But
see?
So no cool story, hat here. This story does kind of involve cool hat. It's just not yours.
Yeah.
All right. So fine. Moving on.
Oh, so now you're ready to climb back up out of the rabbit hole.
Yes, now I am.
I see. Okay, so moving on.
Well, while we drifted off a little bit into politics, only tangentially. Mm-hmm. Did you notice Tim Cook's little barnstorm tour of France?
You know, the fact that you used barnstorm to describe his junket was interesting, I thought, and probably kind of telling.
Well, it seemed appropriate.
Yeah. Brian, it seemed appropriate. Why do you say that?
So he posted three, you know, he's been doing this thing where he's posting photographs from where he goes.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to Iowa, and we got pictures. We got a local news story. Right.
Yeah. About photos of him with the governor and one of the mayors.
Yeah. For where Apple's going to be building a data center. And as well as his photographs, did he visit an app store? I forget what all the photographs he posted, but he tweeted, two or three photographs. He did an interview with the local Iowan newspaper that included a complete publicity appearance with the governor and local mayor. Almost instantly there was talk about whether or not Tim was, you know, the process of running for some kind of political office or thinking about it. And I felt at the time, I thought that there was some merit to that.
Okay.
And then he also did an appearance in Austin, right? Where he announced the rollout of a community college Swift programming training mm-hmm. program that Apple had put together and was implementing with, I think 30 of the top community colleges in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And but he didn't, they didn't just announce it. He went to Austin and he did an appearance with the mayor. Mm-hmm. And again, tweeted photos, and he tweeted photos of all the people he was visiting in Austin. And then he visited some other places and he posted some more photos. And he has since posted more photos, more trips. And it all, I mean, these are kinds of, these are the kinds of things that we hadn't seen out of Tim. Certainly didn't ever see them from Steve Jobs, mm-hmm. but they're two completely different people.
So he's hopping around the United States and, well, and around the world, and he's getting these photo ops where you see him with the average man, but then you also see him with politicians.
Right. And he's also tweeting about national and international events. Like, for instance, yesterday, he tweeted thoughts about there's wildfires raging through Northern California, not too far away from my house, far enough away that I personally am not in danger. But we've had that we know of 17 people have as of this podcast, mm-hmm. 17 people are known to have died. 180 people are missing. Thousands of structures and homes have been burned. This is like happened in a flash. It started on Sunday night.
Yeah. The northern part of Santa Rosa looks like someone dropped a bomb.
Yeah.
And it's just from the fires.
Yeah, just from the fires. And Tim, you know, Tim tweeted about that. He tweeted about the Las Vegas mass murder. Mm-hmm. He's tweeted about various political issues, including the Charlottesville fascist gathering and the death there. He has tweeted several things, and then he goes to France, and he tweeted a visit to one of the Normandy war cemeteries there. I think it's the Normandy American. I forget what it's called.
But the point is, it ended up being another political photo op.
Yeah, you can maybe call it political. It's not overtly political. I mean, it's the kind of thing where, you know, the photograph of Tim, he's very somber, and, you know, and obviously he's being told about some aspect of the cemetery. There's two other people in the photo, and Tim and another person are listening. Another person is clearly explaining, and, you know, very somber, very thoughtful. And he mentioned the sacrifice of all the World War II veterans who saved us from Nazis. Mm-hmm. Remember when we were all about the stopping the Nazis?
Good times,
right? Yeah. Total good times.
Yeah.
Total good times. And okay. So he then posted three more pictures of like, he was visiting one of Apple's supply partners, and then two iOS developers.
So what you're telling me is Tim Cook wants to be the mayor of France.
I don't know. Okay. So here's one aspect.
You're not even going to jump on mayor of France.
No, I actually, here's what happened. You said that inside my head, I laughed, mm-hmm. and then I just moved on, and it was all like in a flash.
Oh, all right. Well, carry on.
I laughed and then like, yeah. Okay. That's funny. So anyway, mayor of France. So Apple is the world's most valuable company. Mm-hmm. Apple is increasingly the pawn of political forces, especially between China and the U.S., to a lesser extent between Russia and the U.S. Apple is used as a pawn by the Chinese in particular, and sometimes the Russians, to mess with the U.S. when there's disagreements over things that have nothing to do with Apple. Mm-hmm. For instance, the U.S. Stops Chinese telecoms from being involved in U.S. telecom infrastructure business. And China will turn around and decide that Russia, that they need to stop Apple from being in a business, or they need to, make demands of Apple about, on censorship or in seeing their code so that they accuse Apple of facilitating spying by the U.S. Mm-hmm. Right. And these are all this has always happened with American companies in particular. And right now it happens to be Apple because Apple is so valuable. Right. So okay. Like, this is just the way these things happen. Companies, large multinational companies, become pawns of political dealings between countries. This is just a thing. So the idea that Tim Cook is just raising his profile, there's a lot of merit to that having a benefit to Apple. And, or maybe he's actually writing a book, and maybe he's raising his profile in anticipation of that book. Or maybe he just wants more people paying attention to Apple, or maybe he's decided to become an attention whore. I don't think that that's the case, by the way, but I guess it's theoretically possible. And it's possible that all of this raising of the profile stuff is all about those kinds of things and doesn't have anything to do with Tim Cook's personal ambitions and politics.
But there's still enough happening that people are wondering.
And here's what I think. I think that Tim Cook is the kind of person who might look at what he thinks is a crisis in leadership in the United States and decide that if I'm not going to do it, who will? If I'm not going to step up, then who will? Then, in other words, people run for politics for a number of reasons. Many of those are very negative reasons: the personal glory, their personal power, the personal narcissistic personality disorder. Trump and there have also been people who have run for office because they wanted to help. And they wanted to try to do the right thing. I think a lot of people actually get into politics because they want to help. And then the system ends up crushing them just like it's crushed everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Which is unfortunate.
As much as I think that H. Ross Perot would have been a terrible president, I believe that he was running for all the right reasons. He really thought that he could just, I'm going to come over here and I'm going to make things right. We're going to get things done. And that he really thought that he could. I don't think that he could, but I think that he thought that he could, and that he was stepping up to try to do the right thing. That's what I think. I didn't know H. Ross personally, but that's my position on him.
Which is totally plausible. I mean, it sure felt that way, even though he was doing the I'm in, I'm out. But yeah.
So the question, and I think that Tim Cook is that kind of person. I think that Tim Cook is the kind of person to say, we need change. And right now there's no one's bringing us that change. So why don't I step up? And I could see him doing that. I'm not saying that he would necessarily win, and I'm not saying that he would necessarily do a good job. As a matter of fact, a fantastic argument could be made that President Trump has effectively ruined any business person's chance of becoming president based on their business record.
Yeah, I'm thinking
for generations to come.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's very likely.
We've seen some of our own readers who have indicated an affinity for conservative politics, and readers who have indicated an affinity for liberal politics. And it's a very, very small data set, to be sure. Only a few people have actually commented on this. But I've seen people on both sides of the equation question Tim Cook's ability and question a business person's ability to be a good politician. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know that Tim Cook could win. I don't know that he could. He's a gay man, for one thing. We never had a gay president.
We have. This would be the first openly gay president.
Thank you. That's an excellent point. That is an excellent point.
So, but still, that would be in our current political climate, a very difficult hurdle to overcome.
Right. And, you know, there's the businessman. So I don't know. I don't know that he could do it. I don't know that he would do it well if he succeeded. I don't know if he could win. I don't know. But I do think that he is very consciously raising his profile one way or another. Tim Cook right now is in the process of going through very deliberate actions to raise his personal profile. He is appearing at things. He is tweeting and talking about them. He's giving interviews. He's making appearances with politicians. For whatever reason, he is raising his profile. I think that there is a significant chance that he is considering a run for some kind of office, be it the Senate, be it the presidency, possibly be it the governorship of California.
Interesting. My feeling is, regardless of whether or not he has his sights set on politics, he has a master plan that's underway right now.
He is a deliberate person.
Yeah.
He is an extremely deliberate person.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole thing with the various photo ops that have happened over the past few months, it just doesn't feel like happenstance. And like you said, Tim Cook is a very deliberate man. So I'm really curious to see what his big plan is.
Yeah, me too. Now here's the biggest argument why I'm completely off base.
Okay.
I also believe that Tim Cook believes it's his responsibility to make sure that his mentor and, to a certain extent, idol, his company, i.e. Steve Jobs and Apple, mm-hmm. to make sure that Apple is on strong footing and is healthy and wealthy and strong, to repeat myself. And we have no indication that anyone's being groomed to replace Tim Cook.
Yeah. There's absolutely no way that Apple wouldn't come up with a well-orchestrated exit plan.
Well, Apple has to have a replacement. The plan for someone dies.
Contingency plan.
Contingency plan. Yeah, Apple has to have a contingency plan for leadership. It's the board of directors must have that would very much risk shareholder lawsuits out the yin yang. Mm-hmm. if something should happen and there was no leadership plan in place. But there's a difference between having a leadership plan, a contingency plan, mm-hmm. and actually grooming someone to replace you.
Right.
Tim Cook was groomed to replace Steve Jobs.
Right.
He was groomed very specifically. He was put in charge of the company when Steve took his medical leave of absences. He was brought in to all the decision-making that Steve Jobs was done for years because Steve Jobs wanted Tim Cook to take his place.
Right. And we're not seeing anything happening right now that would indicate that someone is being groomed to take over.
Nope, we're not. So that's the biggest fly in my Tim might be thinking about politics moment.
Interesting. Well, yeah, still, you have to wonder, all those photos.
All those photos. Yeah, it's interesting. I stand by. I know that I'm right. I don't know that I'm right, but I know that I'm right that Tim Cook is actively raising his profile right now.
Yeah. So
I bet you, by the way, that John Keat You know John, don't you?
Of course I know John. I've met John.
Of course you have.
He's ridden around in my car.
John Keat, we're going to record an episode of Pop.0 today. Mm-hmm. That's the video podcast that we do that's currently on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't like Tim Cook.
And I hadn't picked up on that.
And I think that he's probably going to want to yell at me based on this conversation in that show.
He's probably going to want to yell about me as well, because I totally triggered him this week.
Oh, that's true. You did, didn't you?
I totally did. It wasn't intentional. Well, that's not exactly true. I can't help myself, Brian. I find those little things that are going to set him off, and I write articles about them.
But to be fair, you're writing about something.
No, that's true.
So, and everything, all of the things trigger John, because that's kind of who he is. So, you know, it's just icing on the cake when you know it's going to happen ahead of time, I suppose. But anyway, so that does happen to be our next topic. So why don't you tell us about it?
All right. So I discovered a thing in Control Center in iOS 11 that is totally new, and I hadn't seen anyone else talking about it. So I wrote it up. And the deal is that airplane mode now has persistent settings. So here's the scenario. Let's say that you're going to get on an airplane. Mm-hmm. And so you put your iPhone into airplane mode, but you still want to use your AirPods on the flight. So once you're in airplane mode, then you turn Bluetooth back on.
Right.
Which is okay to do.
Right.
And then you get off the plane, wherever it is that you're going to, you turn airplane mode off. A few days later, you need to get back on the plane to fly home. So you turn airplane mode on, and it turns off everything except Bluetooth, because it remembered that's what you left on last time. And it's just one of those things where if you don't know what's going to happen, then you might be a little surprised to see that airplane mode isn't doing what it used to do. And so I wrote this up so people would know about it, and John flipped.
So what was he cranky about?
He's cranky that airplane mode is not airplane mode anymore. Apple's doing something else, and you tap the button and expect it to do one thing, and it does a different thing. And Apple should be focusing on more important stuff than changing the behavior of a button to be something else.
Well, okay, he's wrong about that, because changing buttons to make them better, in theory, is a big, huge part of what Apple should be doing. So I completely disagree with him on that part. I don't think that focusing on what the behavior of a software button is doing is the reason why we haven't had all that many Mac updates. And this year, we've actually had all the Mac updates. Mm-hmm. Except for Mac Pro, but they say that they're working on that.
Right. Well, and we already knew there was no Mac Pro this year.
Already knew that, right.
Yeah, next year at the earliest.
Right.
But we know there's an iMac Pro coming in December.
Well, it's supposed to be this year. This year is running out.
Yeah. We know HomePod is December. We know iPad or iMac Pro is end of the year sometime.
Yeah, it was the last part of this year, supposedly. Yeah. So I will, however, put in a plug for John's position that it's really weird that airplane mode is not airplane mode anymore. I don't think that it should remember what you did and do it. If you're going to push a button to go in airplane mode, it seems like it should fully go into airplane mode.
All right. And I totally get that. Now, here's the thing. Since I've discovered this little setting thing, this persistent setting, I've told several people that are just like regular users, meaning they're not in the echo chamber like we are, having to live with digging through every little thing just to see what's there. They're just the people that use their iPhones because it's part of their life, part of their business, part of their world. And when I told them about this setting, every single one of them was so happy.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, part of what's coloring my jaundiced view here is, and I'm assuming it's a yellow color, sort of a jaundice color, is that I don't like that the new control center, and the control center in iOS 11 was dramatic. Did you know, by the way, that I just updated half of iPad for Dummies for iOS 11?
Oh, yeah. Wait. No, Brian, seriously?
Yeah, I did. I worked with Bob Levitis, the Ed Begg, who's the person who has co-written half that book through nine versions now.
Wow.
Yeah, and this is the 10th version. He's working on iPhone 10 for Dummies, so he couldn't do this one. And so they brought me on as a hired gun to update Ed's half of that book. And it was a fantastic experience. We had a ridiculously short deadline. And it all started like the moment I got back from vacation. Mm-hmm. But I turned in the last chapter last night. So, yay, right?
Congratulations.
Thank you. So in the process of doing that, I learned all kinds of things about iOS 11 that I hadn't noticed yet, because I was on vacation and I wasn't digging into it the way that one would if one knew that one was going to be updating a book. Mm-hmm. And Control Center is one of those things that has been massively updated in iOS, a huge change. And, you know, in a whole bunch of different ways. One of those changes is that if you hit the Wi-Fi or Bluetooth buttons in Control Center, it doesn't turn them off, even though it looks like it turns it off. If you compare it to previous behavior, it turns them off, but it doesn't turn it off. All it really does is disconnect you from either Wi-Fi networks that you're on or Bluetooth devices to which you are paired.
So, Brian, you were out of town when I tried to explain this initially to people. And the way that I came up with that has helped a lot of people kind of wrap their heads around this. When you tap those buttons, they don't turn those features off anymore, or they don't turn those radios off anymore. What they do is they activate what I'm calling Apple's Wi-Fi firewall and Bluetooth firewall, so that it blocks everything except Apple's own services.
Well, that's fine. I don't like it.
Oh, I'm not saying that as an endorsement. I'm just tossing that out there because that's helped a lot of people visualize what's happening here. I don't like it either.
There's a big reason for that, because another change in Control Center is the fact that most of Control Center, not all of them, but most of them, if you tap and hold on an individual control, it will expand and give you more options. Mm-hmm. Right. Have you looked at that?
Yeah.
So, for instance, if you tap and hold on brightness, you, instead of just having the thermometer slider for controlling your brightness, you also get night shift and true tone quick controls. Right. That's great. That's fantastic. If you tap and hold on the music controls, it expands and you get volume and you get larger options, and you even get an AirPlay option for controlling which speakers you've got, none of which is available in the unexpanded version of those controls. And what Apple could have done is, when you tap and hold on the radio control buttons, which includes airplane mode, cellular, if you have a cellular device, Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, they could have added options for this new behavior, which is, disconnect me from Wi-Fi networks, disconnect me from Bluetooth devices.
Right. And instead, the tile just pops open and shows all the buttons again.
Well, and you get two new buttons, AirDrop and Personal Hotspot, which is great. But I think that the behavior that they made default, which is to disconnect you from networks and disconnect you from devices, that instead should have been a bonus option if you touched and expanded those controls. And that otherwise, pushing those buttons where they go from on to off should have made them go on or off.
I agree. I think it's very confusing. And I think the confusion that this behavior change creates is worse than the confusion people had when they would say go into and tap and turn off Bluetooth, and then their Apple Pencil stopped working.
Yes.
I think that was a much more acceptable confusion.
Yes.
But that's not how Apple sees
it. And you think that the direction that they have taken is specifically to address that.
Yeah, I think this is all about maintaining a good user experience from Apple's perspective.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good user experience to have users confused about what they're doing. In particular, for instance, one reason why one might go turn off Wi-Fi is because one is wanting to conserve power. Now, it could be because you're suddenly concerned that you're compromised, or the network that you're on is compromised. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's true that's not going to happen for very many people. Even if they are compromised, they're not going to know it.
Yeah, I agree.
But the reason why you're turning off Wi-Fi is to save power.
And if you do it from Control Center, you are leaving the Wi-Fi radio running.
Running, yeah. Same thing with Bluetooth. And so I to me, it's not a good choice. It's not a good trade-off. It really doesn't make a lot of sense, in my opinion.
I'm with you. But I really think the reason Apple did it is what I said. This was about maintaining
the
user experience.
Well, maintaining a particular aspect of the user experience.
Yes. Yeah.
That they, for whatever reason, deem more important. And so I tie this into the airplane mode issue with remembering what your last choice was. Mm-hmm. To me, when you go into airplane mode, you should be going fully into airplane mode. If you want to then turn something back on, you should probably do it. And from a standpoint of, I want my device in airplane mode, again, possibly to save power. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to remember what's actually on, because there's no indication. Like if you go into airplane mode in Control Center, there's no indication that it's remembering your previous.
No, actually there is. That's how I figured it out.
Explain.
So when you turn on airplane mode.
Yeah.
And we use the Bluetooth scenario, because I think that's the more likely scenario. The Bluetooth button goes back to blue. So the next time you enable airplane mode, the airplane button goes orange and the Bluetooth button stays blue.
Oh, I see. Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
I still don't like it.
And it's the same thing. If you go into the settings app, you will see the toggles, or where, if you haven't actually gone into the Bluetooth settings pane, you'll still see where it says on.
Hmm. I don't like it.
And I get why you don't like it. I find it weird.
I don't think I'm being change resistant either.
No, I know I get it. But I'm finding fascinating is that everyone that I've told this to has outside of our little tech circle.
Yeah, outside of the echo chamber.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear from readers. I mean, am I off my rocker here? And is this like such an obvious in hindsight advancement that I'm just not seeing it? Love to know what you guys think.
I'm very curious too. And I'll let you know if my perspective on this changes after next week, because I have a couple flights coming up. Hmm. And I'll be using airplane mode.
Well, you know what the behavior is now. So you can adjust your behavior thinking and your expectations accordingly. And to be fair, that's an aspect of change resistance. I realize that once you know what it's doing, that's fine. The problem is this is not only a change; it's actually a change against established norms. Like normally, when you turn something off, it's off.
Yes.
It's not still on, kind of. That's the thing. That's the thing here. It's like Apple is trying to redefine what on and off is. And that's the philosophical aspect of what I don't like about this.
All right. Here's another question. And I'm just throwing hypothetical stuff out here. What's the likelihood that the majority of iPhone users know that when they go into airplane mode, they can turn things back on?
Low.
I'm with you. I'm assuming it's a very low percentage. So for most people, this has no change to the feature for them. Their iPhone will still go into airplane mode and be just airplane mode, because they're not going to be turning Bluetooth or Wi-Fi back on. So those radios go off and they just stay off while they're in airplane mode.
Yeah.
And I know it sounds like I'm trying to defend the feature. I'm just tossing stuff out for us to think about.
No, yeah, I think I get that, and I very much respect it. All in all, I love iOS 11.
Yeah, I'm very pleased with it, and boy, do I love it on my iPads.
Yeah.
This has taken my iPad Pro from the device that I keep saying, you know, one of these days I'll be able to use this as an alternative to my laptop, like seriously do that. Mm-hmm. And with iOS 11, discounting podcasting, most of the time, a large percentage of the time, I really can use my 12.9-inch iPad Pro in lieu of my laptop when I'm out and about.
Sure.
Which to me is just fantastic.
Sure.
Yeah. iOS 11 is pretty cool. I'm really, really liking it.
Yeah, I like iOS 11, and you know this discussion we just had is a super nitpick about a particular philosophical angle about a particular and specific issue within iOS 10. It's not a condemnation of the entire operating system, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, I like it,
and everything else about the control center changes. I like it too. You know, it took me a little bit to, I don't know, I sort of get used to the new application switcher and the fact that that's actually essentially part of Control Center.
Oh, yeah, on the iPad, it is.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, does it not do that on iPhone? I've at this point, by the way, I've now spent a lot more time on my iPhone.
No.
Oh, you're right, yeah, the application switcher is not on iPad, iPhone. It's only on iPad.
Yeah, you have the iOS 10 style application switcher on the iPhone.
Yeah, so you do. That's interesting. It's an interesting deviation on Apple's part. They usually keep these things consistent.
Well, yeah. And yet, there you go.
Right. All right. Again, love to hear what our listeners think. So,
how can people do that, Brian?
They can write us.
Oh, that would be swell. Where would they? How would they get that to us?
acm@macobserver.com.
Oh, okay.
You can hit us up on Twitter at Context Machine.
Uh huh.
And I'm personally TM O'Brien. It's Brian with a Y.
And I'm at Jay Gamet.
There you have it.
Well, we're kind of out of time.
Yeah.
That's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.